How exciting is this? Tickets go on sale this Friday, 1 o'clock local time for Def Leppard all across Australia, November in Perth, Adelaide, Brisbane, Melbourne, and also Sydney. And lead man of the great Def Leppard joins us right now in Triple M. Joe Elliott, how are you, Joe?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, mate, we are super pumped that you're coming back to Australia.
Yes, we are. I mean, we try to do it as often as possible. Every 3 years or so, whenever we get the chance, it's the first thing on the agenda. Let's get down there. You know, it's really exciting for us to be able to bring this show to Australia because, you know, not only are we playing with the Scorpions,
yes,
which is something we haven't done for God knows how many years, we're playing the whole Hysteria album in sequence every night, you know. Plus a bunch of other things. I don't want anybody to think that all they get is this deal, because it's only like 63, 65 minutes. So there's a bunch of other things as well. But, you know, we're playing it in sequence, like towards the end of the show. So whatever we play beforehand, it probably won't be the same every night.
Back in the day, Joe, I remember when Hysteria came out. Like, it was a long record, and there's a bunch of songs. I mean, it spawned six top 10 singles, but there's some songs there that you probably haven't played for a long time. Do you need to relearn those songs?
There actually aren't that many that we haven't played. Because, as you say, with the hit singles, they kind of tend to get played often. So there's about, you know, 60% of that record is completely, like, you know, defined by us and in our DNA and all that kind of thing. There's three or four of them that kind of come and go, but it's only a case of getting the rust off, and obviously we're going to rehearse before we get down to do these shows. So, you know, that's the great thing about being in a band. You know, you've got a lot of hits, so you know that you've got a career, which means that you can go places and play them, but you've also got a bit of room in the set to kind of bring in things that are a bit more obscure now and again.
Did you realize
freshen up the set and freshen up your mind, you know?
Yeah, of course. Did you realize when you were recording Hysteria that it would go on to be the iconic album it is today? Was that in the back of your mind, or were you just in there recording just more songs and doing what you love doing?
Well, we knew it wasn't just an ordinary album. It wasn't just a contractually obligated delivery, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We knew we'd made something special because it had taken a long time. We'd gone through a lot of grief to make that record, and grief is normally a really good ingredient on records. I mean, you think about Rumours and Fleetwood Mac and what they went through to get that. There's no wonder it's such a good record. But it's the same thing with Hysteria. We knew it was great. Of course, we had no idea what it was going to go on to become, because we're not soothsayers or visionaries in that respect of what we can tell is going to happen in the future. But we knew that we'd dropped something that had the potential to go the distance, like a Dark Side of the Moon or a Back in Black, or, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we'd been kept off the top of the American charts with the previous album by Thriller by Michael Jackson.
Oh, no
kidding. So the idea was, let's make our own Thriller then.
Yeah.
You know, that was the whole point of trying to make a record that was going to be massive. And we had all the right ingredients to do that, an enthusiastic band, a very enthusiastic and knowledgeable producer, and a very flexible record label who just kept paying for it.
Yeah, because it was 3 years in the making, wasn't it, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, we had to keep... We went so much into debt to make that record, but we were determined to do it because we wanted to make a statement. That was the important thing for us. It's never been about chasing the money for us. It's sort of been like chasing the adulation, or, you know, leaving a legacy. We wanted to make an album that we could put side by side with all the ones that we bought as teenagers. That was the whole point.
Yeah, and there was a lot going on personally in the band at that time, because, I mean, was that the same time that Rick was involved in the car accident in that 3 years?
Right at the front end of that recording, I mean, that was tough. You know, that was new. We'd already started recording in August of 84, and it was Christmas, you know, he lost his arm. So then all through 85, 86 was us making this record, him trying to recuperate from this and rehabilitate himself, you know, and prepare himself to come back into the band. So there was a lot going off. When we were making that record, we weren't just making that record. You know, it's not like we were on 7 days a week for 2.5 years recording.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody would take that long. But it was recorded over a 2.5 year period, but there was a lot of, you know, soul searching and time away and stuff like that going off at the same time. And that's probably all part of why it worked.
Yeah. Did you ever think about, you know, with Rick, with the accident and all, that he would not be back in the band? Did that ever go through your mind, or was he always going to be a part of the record?
I think for two or three days, it would have been logical, and I'd be lying if I didn't say that we didn't think, well, you know, what's he going to do? You know, I mean, how can you play drums with one arm? That was obviously would have gone through our minds. I don't remember specifically thinking that, but I'm sure I did, because he's 30 odd years ago now. You know,
yeah.
With his enthusiasms and to say, well, look, you know, I think there's a way around this. And of course, at first we're all thinking, you know, Alex, the drug's talking, you know. But when he actually showed us the theory of it, we all went, well, look, you know, if you can do it, we ain't going to kick you out. So it's your call. And he came back. He was so focused. Once he got the thumbs up that we were into it as much as he was. Because that's the great thing about this band is it's not just a collection of people that are contracted to each other to do a certain job. We're just mates that just got together for a laugh. And he just developed into this behemoth that he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're still not contracted to each other. We just do it because we want to.
That's incredible.
You know, and so it's family, you know. And, and we weren't going to kick him out. A, we'd have been too cowardly to do that anyway.
Mm. Yeah.
But he was so determined to come back. We're like, well, who are we to stop him? So he's in.
So you wrote your first song at the age of, like, 8, because, you know, you were
a young
man into music. Were your parents into music, Joe? Was that something that you were sort of born into?
Well, they were musical, but not on a professional level.
Right.
My dad played piano a bit and harmonica and sang like Nat King Cole, and my mother taught herself guitar at 36.
Oh, no kidding.
You know, bought one of these things out of a catalogue and had it delivered to the post, and she taught me my first 3 or 4 chords, thank God.
Wow.
And she could sing like Joan Baez, you know, and they were just naturally good performers. So we'd have these little sessions on a Friday night where I'd join in on the bongos with them, and then I'd get them to play Jeepster by T-Rex, so I had something to do. And it was fun, you know, it was great. And once my mom taught me the chords, I was off when I wanted to write my own songs, you know, so at the age of 8, there she was, this woman leaving me, as they do, you know.
That's right. And you also hired a rehearsal space, Joe, and you hadn't even played a chord with the band at that stage. Is that true?
Yeah, I was in the band about 6 weeks before I even had the money to buy a microphone.
Wow.
Because that's how ridiculous it is, you know. I mean, we weren't like seasoned musicians getting together like the Yardbirds becoming Led Zeppelin. We were just four kids, just the way you two did it, you know.
Yes.
It was the idea of getting a band together to see what you could do and build it from literally ground zero all the way up, you know.
Isn't
and
incredible.
We had way more enthusiasm than ability. and that shows in all the early stuff, but the enthusiasm did get us a record deal. There was something there.
Yeah.
There was a rough diamond that needed a damn good polish.
Well,
we were allowed space to breathe, which I doubt would happen to a band that's starting now. It just, the rules have changed.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because, you know, the music industry when you were starting out to what it is these days.
Excuse me, Dave. I apologise for interrupting. It's just a 1-minute reminder. Thank you.
Okay, no problems. I was just about to say quickly, the music industry has changed a hell of a lot since you started out. And, you know, selling records is probably no longer a thing. It's about touring, I suppose, these days, is it, Joe?
It is, you know, when people say, oh, you know, we always joke about the chart botherers, you know, not being chart botherers. And I said, yeah, well, we're in good company because, you know, up until in passing away, Bowie had hardly been a chart botherer, and Paul McCartney and Pink Floyd and some amazing artists that can sell out stadiums, but nobody buys records anymore. Mm-hmm. So who cares, you know?
Yeah.
The music industry's changed. It's finally gone to the important part. The reason we got a band together in the first place wasn't to spend 3 years in a studio. It was because we'd seen Slade and Queen and Mott the Hoople and Roxy Music and Bowie and Bolan on Top of the Pops. And we saw what it was like to stand up on a stage and have all these screaming chicks in front of them thinking, some of that, that's better than a factory.
Yes.
That's way better than a factory. So now we're living the dream there because playing live is what we all wanted to do anyway. So more power to it, you know. But yeah, the industry's changed. But, you know, if you adapt, you can survive. And I suppose we're one of many examples of that situation.
Absolutely. Well, you're absolute thrill to talk to you, Joe. We're going to wrap things up. We've been given the wind-up. All across Australia, you're coming in November. Tickets go on sale on Friday the 4th of May. What a thrill to talk to you, Joe. Much success to the band. We love Def Leppard here at Triple M. And thanks so much for the chat. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Dangerous Dave. Stay dangerous.